remember walking in the third quarter. I was walking down with Doug Williams, who was the quarterback of the Redskins, and, you know, the whole conversation was, you know, 15 minutes from now, one of us is going to be in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
And just, unfortunately, the wrong guy went.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Skol Stories. I'm your host, Mike Wobschall, inside TCO Studios at Winter Park, coming to you after another Vikings victory. That's 8 in a row for your favorite football team. Your Minnesota Vikings are 10-2. They're in first place in the NFC North, and they have the number one seed in the NFC as we enter week 14. What does that get you in week 14? It gets you nothing. As all of the Vikings players and coaches, including Mike Zimmer, have said, this team has accomplished nothing yet, but it's been a fun ride so far. All of the team's goals still within reach. It should be a fun finish to the season. And of course, you're going to hear the finish to the season right here on KFAN and the Vikings Radio Network. But right now, you're going to hear some stuff about Vikings history, because that's what Skol Stories does. We're going to continue our conversation with last week's guest, Scott Studwell. And before we do that, we're going to bring in Craig Peters, who joined us last week as well and was with me when we broke it down with Scott Studwell. We talked about a ton of stuff with him, Craig. And tonight, the folks are going to hear some interesting stuff about 1987, about his transition into the front office, and about some more current Vikings issues like Chad Greenway and the current team. It should be pretty fun.
Yeah, so I thought it was really fascinating to think back to 1987. It's a little bit before my earliest football memories, per se. But I'm sure that a lot of our listeners remember it well. You had the strike, so replacement players for three games. Yep. And the Vikings that started the season are kind of keeping an eye on things, and they go 0-3, and then it's like,
And you could see the anguish a little bit in Stud's face.
Yeah.
and hear it maybe in his voice when he talked about it, couldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's not controlling your own destiny.
Right. You know? Exactly, which is what everyone's trying to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know, I always get a kick out of backing into the playoffs as if there's a bad way to get into the playoffs.
Beep,
right.
Beep.
If you get into the playoffs, you're in a good mood.
You
right?
are.
Yeah. But the Vikings truly did back into the playoffs in 1987, but they made the most of it and they went on a great run. And we get into that with Scott in this conversation. So lots of good stuff coming up here with Scott Studwell. We're going to get back to the rest of the conversation right now. Here's Scott.
The 1987 season. I think a lot of people listening, they might remember that you guys went to the NFC title game, but a lot of things happened before that.
It was a strange year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had a really good football team. Defensively, we were really good up front, and you know, we had a lot of really good players offensively. I think we started out 2-0, if I'm not mistaken. Then we lost three games with the strike team, and then we came back and we played, I think we won, four out of five or five out of six, and then we lost three of the last four, maybe.
Yeah, quote unquote, backed into the playoffs.
Yeah, and we did, to be honest with you. I mean, we lost the last game, if I'm
finished 8-7.
And kind of snuck into the playoffs,
yep.
You know, and, you know, went to New Orleans. Nobody expected us to win down there, and we won handedly down there. Mm-hmm. Offensively, we played great. Went out to San Francisco and beat a great football team out there.
With all those Hall of Famers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and then unfortunately went to Washington, and we had been on the road for, you know, 3 weeks and had a heartbreaking loss in Washington, obviously. And had a chance, but we didn't get it done, you know. So, I mean, that was probably the most heartbreaking game I had ever been a part of as a player. We went to the NFC Championship game my rookie season. We lost to Dallas, and I thought to myself that, you know, heck, this is going to be easy. We're going to do this every year. And it didn't happen till 10 years later. And, you know, we didn't get it done. And there was a real good chance that we probably could have won the whole thing, you know, but it didn't happen. So there's fond memories of that whole run, but it still didn't end well. So,
yeah, and it doesn't end well for any of the teams except for one. I mean, what made it maybe a little more dramatic and emotional is everything that you went through to get up to that point. I mean, with the strike and the wins and losses and then being such heavy underdogs in the playoff run.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just, I mean, it was a tough year from a standpoint of just trying to stay focused on football with everything else going on with the being unsettled with the labor and the strike, and it could have very easily, I think, torn apart the locker room if we didn't have enough people down there to help people understand what's going on and why this is happening and this is the reason why this is happening, and it could have very easily gotten away from us, I think. There were so many highs and lows during the course of that season with, you know, starting out strong and losing those three games and then playing well in the middle of the season and then kind of maybe even underachieving a little bit at the end. You know, so I don't think anybody gave us a chance other than us when we went to New Orleans and we kind of caught fire from there. Beat two really good football teams and lost to another really good football team that ended up winning it all. So I remember walking the fourth quarter, the end of the third quarter, we switched ends. I was walking down with Doug Williams, who was the quarterback of the Redskins, and, you know, the whole conversation was, you know, 15 minutes from now, one of us is going to be in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
And just unfortunately, the wrong guy went.
Yeah, I'd say so.
During the stoppage or the strike, Henry Thomas was talking about how you were one of the veterans who organized practices for the guys on the roster.
Well, we tried to organize stuff, but it was a little bit of a crapshoot too, you know. And I mean, it was hard to keep people engaged the longer it went on, and you know, and. Probably more so mentally than physically, you know, because guys could easily go work out on their own. You could easily stay in shape. You could easily, but you're not getting spoon-fed with game plans every day and in it emotionally because you know you're not playing on Sunday. That was probably the hardest part. Mm-hmm. And trying to keep everybody informed of what was going on, I think Steve Jordan did a great job with you know, letting everybody know what's going on, and it was a tough time. It was a tough time for the league, you know, and it was a tough time for us. But you know, everybody had to go through it, and it was unfortunate. You know, I went through two strikes as a player, and never really bought into either one of them from a standpoint of, you know. Employer-employee relationships, and I guess I was always of the mindset that, you know, these people own this football team, and why should they give us half the money? And when, but that's okay, you know. I guess that's just kind of the way I was taught and the way I grew up. But
and so the coaches were the same coaches throughout, correct? And were you allowed to talk to them during the strike?
Well, we weren't supposed to have a lot of interaction with them, yeah. But, you know, and there was – they were really kind of, you know, unfortunately for them, I mean, they were stuck. I mean, they had to coach this team that they put together for them. And
they had to coach guys like us.
Well, whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, right. You know, so, I mean, I felt bad for them, but yeah. – We weren't supposed to be around the facility. We weren't supposed to be, you know, in conversation with the coaches. And so, you know, every once in a while you'd chat with them.
But. Right. Did you watch on TV?
Oh, yeah.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
God, that had to be just terrible.
Oh, yeah, it was awful. Yeah.
Yeah. Scream at the TV, like fans now?
It was bad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we didn't put together a very good strike team.
More great stuff with Scott Studwell coming up, but right now we're going to go to a break. Before we do, a programming note that you can join host Mike Mussman along with Andrew Sendejo at Carboni's in Lakeville on Thursday at 5:30 p.m. for a live broadcast of Vikings Country. You could win some great prizes, including tickets in the Miller Lite Lounge at U.S. Bank Stadium. Visit Vikings.com/Vikings Country for more info and a full schedule. And for the rest of our conversation with Scott Studwell, please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment. Hey everyone, it's Wobby back with more Skol Stories. Our guest today, Scott Studwell. We're going to continue our conversation with him in a minute. But first, do you know someone with a heart of a Viking who deserves to go to Super Bowl 52? Share their story and help us honor the most deserving fans in our community with a pair of tickets to Super Bowl 52. Nominate fans at Vikings.com/heartofaviking or use the hashtag #heartofaviking on social media. Also, to catch every episode ever done of Skol Stories, plus all the other great programming on KFAN and from the Vikings Entertainment Network, you can catch the Vikings channel on the iHeartRadio app. The Minnesota Vikings and KFAN Radio have teamed up to create the all-new Vikings channel. To hear exclusive interviews and breakdowns of your favorite team, download the free iHeartRadio app and search Minnesota Vikings. Okay, we need more Scott Studwell, and we have it. Here it is.
Was there a point in your playing career when you were like, I think even when I'm done playing, I'm going to stick around and be a scout?
I mean, obviously, you see the end of the road, or you anticipate the end of the road, and you don't know exactly when it's going to come until it comes. There was some thought and some, not necessarily discussion, but, you know, when Roger came on board, Hedrick, mm-hmm. You know, I had kind of talked to him briefly on some things before I had retired. You know, it got tabled, and it was never, you know, it wasn't an ongoing conversation, and it wasn't. And then, you know, finally my last year in the league, when I knew the time had come, you know, that took its toll emotionally and mentally, and you know, it was time. And so it really made the decision to retire from playing easy. I couldn't play anymore. You know, and maybe some people might say I couldn't have played 2 or 3 years ahead of that time. But, you know, eventually my wife finally looked at me and asked me what the hell I was going to do for the rest of my life. And to be honest with you, I wanted to stay in football. You know, I mean, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but Roger hired me as the assistant to the president. They stuck me in the old draft room, and I was doing player program stuff because they had just initiated that with John Wooten throughout the league, and I was terrible at that because I still had too much player in me. And then it kind of just evolved maybe into a scouting role and say, well, we'll send you out with Conrad, or we'll send you out with this guy, and the rest is kind of history. But I like I said before, I just – this is me, you know. I mean, it's, I can't see myself doing anything else.
Do you remember that first scouting trip?
Oh yeah, I do. It was a memorable one too. Yeah, I went out with Conrad, and we went to Wyoming. We went to UNLV. We drove through the night in a snowstorm, and he turned his lights off because he couldn't see. And I'm like, nah, maybe I'm not going to go out with Conrad very much anymore. But you know, that was kind of my indoctrination to the scouting world. But I do remember it.
Actually, I'm sure it was really fun.
It was. It was.
Yeah. If he makes it through that, then we know that he's got what it takes.
Yeah, well, maybe that's probably part of it, too. They probably thought I'd quit. I actually kind of liked it. So, right. Yeah.
You're both still here, by the way.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
So obviously the process of scouting players has changed a lot. But if you think back to all the players you've evaluated coming out, maybe some of the most impressive players that you can remember, anyone that stands out that fans will remember that guy?
You know, I think more so than the guys that you hit on, or the guys that you miss on, are probably – they're the ones that you remember the most, because you just say, what did I miss on this guy? How did I miss on this guy? And those are the guys that you remember. The longer that you're in this business, on this side of the business, it's an educated guess how these kids are going to turn out as pros. I mean, it's a crapshoot. You never know, who's going to emerge as the top pick in this class or the top player in this group. And you do all the due diligence. I mean, trust me, we cross every T, yeah. We dot every I, and we know these kids as well as anybody in the league knows them. But, the things you can't measure are their heart and their head. You just can't. You can't get it in a 15-minute interview. You can't get it in an hour interview. And what separates these guys more often than not is their passion for football, their instincts, and their football character. And if they have that, you got a chance. If they don't, sometimes they get it, but more times they don't. And you make more mistakes on players that don't have the passion and don't have the football character that you're looking for, because if when they don't have that, there's a big piece missing. And they might have all the ability in the world, but if they don't have that other intangible or other intangibles, they're never going to be the type of players that you think they're going to be. I mean, trust me, we grade a lot of guys every year, and, almost to a fault, but that's okay. And there's always guys that you're going to miss, and we miss, and everybody misses. I mean, we've got guys on our roster that were cast-offs from other teams that maybe even we didn't have grades on in college. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to put a team together, but, it's been working for us with Rick and Zim, and I think we've got the right combination of people. We've overcome a lot of stuff this year, and the quarterback's playing out of his mind right now.
A good example of a guy.
Which is exactly, so I didn't think he was going to be this good. I don't know if collectively we thought he was going to be this good, but he thinks he's good, and that's half the battle, and he is. He's playing lights out.
And he's on a good team.
And he's on a good team, and they're utilizing his abilities to play to his strong suits, and I think Pat's doing a great job. Everything's working right now. We just got to keep the same formula working, and hopefully we can have that shot at it.
Yeah. All right. Chad Greenway. Obviously, you liked him because we drafted him. I'm guessing that you thought he was going to be a good player. What do you remember about him?
Well, Chad was a farm kid from South Dakota that played nine-man football in high school and was under-recruited. And he came to Iowa with a chip on his shoulder and did everything the right way. And he could run. He was instinctive. He was smart. He played hard. All the intangibles that you're looking for. And, I think fortunately for us, he went to the combine and he had a poor workout at the combine. He didn't run very well and he was stumbling around in the drills. But if you turn on the tape, you don't see that, So I thought he was a great fit from a schematic standpoint, from a personality standpoint, from an athletic standpoint, from a production standpoint. So obviously, we took him in the first round. We thought he was a good player. And then he comes in here and he blows his knee up in the second preseason game or first. Was it the first preseason game? Yeah. On a kickoff. Yes. And I'm like, oh, hell. But from that day forward, there was never a doubt about his character, about his willingness to do whatever he had to do to play and perform at a high level. He was a great teammate. If we had 15 Chad Greenways, we'd have a championship here. But we don't. And I don't think we've replaced him yet. And we've got some young kids in the pipeline. But we lost a leadership piece, and we lost a good football player. you know, due to retirement. But
right.
In some ways, I feel bad for him because he's missing out on this year.
Yeah.
You know, that I know he wanted to be a part of, you know, that I think he'd play for nothing if you asked him to. You can't play forever. And I'm really happy for him because he's earned it and he deserves it.
During his retirement, he mentioned the influence that you had had on him specifically. What did that mean to you to just kind of be with him from wire to wire and know that you played a role in the career he had?
I mean, I'm proud of that fact. I'm proud of the fact that he feels that way about me, kind of like he knows how I feel about him. It's hard to get too close to guys when, you know, at some point you may have to tell them that, you know, this isn't for you anymore, but probably not him. But, you know, the thing that I've observed about this football team that I think is a tribute to Zim and Rick and some of the leaders downstairs, this is a very close football team. You know, this is a very supportive football team. I think the egos are pretty small. I mean, you see a lot of guys that are encouraging each other and really like each other, and it's a different kind of feeling. Maybe than some other teams that I played on and that we've had here in the past. And I think it's all about the team kind of mentality. It's kind of a unique feeling, and it's nice to be around. Hopefully that will propel us into doing some great things, you know, so we'll see.
Craig, you've been around the team long enough now to know that Scott Studwell does not spew hyperbole and say nice things about anyone for any reason. So to hear him talk about Chad Greenway that way tells you really the importance that Chad has to the organization.
Absolutely. Just this gritty sincerity, you know.
Yep.
It's just the Midwest, farming, small rural America, Chad. Like, I mean, he it's almost like seeing another version of yourself and like your value system come in and carry the purple torch.
Yeah. All right, Craig, thanks for your help with that. Appreciate it. And our thanks to Scott Studwell for joining us for two episodes of Skull Stories. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Vikings-Panthers, Sunday at noon. The pregame show with Mike Musselman starts at 10. Then Paul Allen will have the boom at noon. Pete Bursich in the booth, Greg Coleman, Ben Lieber on the sideline. It's going to be a party, and you're invited, so we hope you're there. On behalf of Craig Peters, Scott Studwell, and the producer, Nate Vaughn, I'm your host, Mike Wobschall, signing off for now. Talk to you next week.